League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The man bag.
My man bag.
El man bag.
Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 22 of the Tottenham Way podcast. I'm Tom, I'm your host. Welcome back, Dan Kilpatrick.
Thanks, mate.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling much better, thank you.
We had lots of people asking about you when they heard that you were ill. So any messages for the well-wishers?
Thank you, well-wishers.
There were no well-wishers, sorry. Also joining us, we're delighted to welcome Ben Pearce. Hello, Ben.
Hi, thanks for having me.
No problem at all. I think everyone knows who you are. Probably everyone on Twitter anyway will know who you are. But tell us a little bit about what you do and how you're connected to Spurs, etc.
Yeah, I mean, judging by, like, obviously Spurs' Twitter following, there are many hundreds of thousands of people who are on Twitter who definitely don't know who I am. I've been Spurs' kind of local newspaper reporter for 8 to 9 years now, since pretty much when Harry Redknapp took over. So I've been writing for a number of local weekly newspapers, mostly Tottenham Journal and then the Ham and High newspaper. But I'll be finishing there in 2 weeks on February the 8th, I've been in the same job in journalism basically all the way through. So it's a little bit weird. It's the first time I've left a job since I was a part-time barman when I was about 22. So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
But the aim is very much to carry on covering Spurs just for different organisations, hopefully. I'm going to be doing a bit for Yahoo UK. And then I kind of supplement a little bit of Dan's stuff for ESPN, write kind of blogs and player ratings and that kind of thing. So I'll be carrying on with that. And then hopefully there'll be a few other organisations. We'll kind of see what's out there. Still very much kind of carrying on with the Spurs beat.
Good to hear. So you said that you started round about when Redknapp took over. So you would have seen Redknapp, AVB, Sherwood and Poch. Now,
yeah, and about 2 weeks of Ramos.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
What a 2 weeks, though.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, yeah, those are some of the, like, you know, it was my first kind of big Premier League press conference, and sat there and he just...
Did Poyet do it?
He was doing it before, and then Ramos kind of had a go in English, and I was basically, I think it was the few weeks when he was doing it in English before he got sacked, and it was just, I mean, I thought... You know, is this what it is? You know, is this what I've been waiting for? It was just, he had this phrase which was, you know, it's normal in football, and he just kept saying it to every answer, and you know, everyone's like, oh, obviously
Sounds
one,
quite
yeah, yeah, yeah. He said, obviously one day, you know, bottom of the league, two points from seven games, you know, this is terrible. And he said, well, you know, this is normal in football, and everyone's sitting there going, it's really not.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah. That's the problem.
Yeah, exactly. And if you keep this going, you might have a problem. So it's a little bit him, and then Redknapp came in very quickly. It's been really interesting, because I've been, you know, covering them from probably their lowest ebb for a while, to, you know, title race last season, the Champions League season, or two Champions League seasons now. So it's been really, really exciting and fascinating to see how it's grown, really, and how they turned it around from what was going on in 2008 to now, where it looks like it wasn't just one title bid last season. It doesn't look like that's going to be a kind of a one off. It looks like, you know, it's going to be a consistent thing now, hopefully, and that's one of the reasons I'm so keen to cover the club. It's that there isn't really anyone else. There isn't another club I'd rather cover. So I'm really keen to see what happens at Wembley and certainly the new stadium as well.
I suppose with a lot of the local lads as well, maybe not so much this season. Look at Mason going, but we had Townsend, Kane, Mason.
Yeah,
really quite a tight, like, you know, in local North London guys. Did that add anything to you as a journalist, or to be able to write from a sort of a narrative point?
Yeah,
of view?
I think definitely. And I sat down. I think it was kind of Josh Onema's first sit down with a newspaper a couple of months ago. That was quite nice, again, with a focus on the North London angle. Mm. But there's definitely been loads of times. I mean, there are a few more Spurs reporters on the beat now, as the interest in them has grown, and Dan's obviously one of them. But there was certainly a time when these guys were coming through, and they weren't big enough or interesting enough for the nationals to necessarily want to speak to them. So Harry Kane, I think it might have been his first goal for Spurs at West Brom when Sherwood was there. Mm. Sherwood brought him into the team, and I think he scored the first of maybe three goals in three successive games, something like that. Mm. And he came out, and none of the nationals were interested. They wanted to kind of speak to one of the big international players. And I was like, oh, you know, Harry, have you got a minute? And he looked a bit surprised and was like, yeah, all right. Mm. And now, you know, just 2 or 3 years later, yeah, he's the one that everyone desperately wants to speak to. So, yeah, you know, that's not to suggest in any way that, you know, we've got this kind of special thing going on, not remotely, and I doubt he'd even know my name. But it's just nice that, you know, you sometimes get to speak to these people first, people like, you know, Townsend, possibly Mason as well, a lot of them when they've made their debut and they're not a big deal and they've just come on for the last 15 minutes, someone like Harry Winks, you're the only one who wants to speak to them. And sometimes that can be just as exciting, rewarding as speaking to the big international players and, you know, speaking to people like Peter Crouch and stuff when he arrived. He was a big character, great to speak to. You know, got really good memories of things like that, especially speaking straight after he scored that winning goal at the Etihad, the night Spurs qualified the Champions League. There was two of us there, spoke to him in a kind of ironically small room. And the Etihad, he was there kind of like leaning over, and that was one of my kind of best memories of, you know, just the amazing night that was. But equally in its own kind of way, speaking to kind of a young lad who's just played his first minutes and has just made his debut at White Hart Lane can be just as exciting.
All for the scrapbook, I suppose, as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you know, yeah, it's really nice.
Kane's going to be an absolute megastar.
Well, that's it. And you never know, you know, whether they will be. You never know whether it might only be, you know, it might be their last game. You never know, you know, they're one and only. It might be, you know, I was there at Leeds when John Obika came on. I was just remembering the other day, and I didn't speak to him that night. But you never really know. But whether these people
one for
are
a slightly different scrapbook.
That's it, exactly. Yeah. You never know when they come on whether this is the start of something. You never know whether they're going to be Harry Kane or whether you know, I don't want to be rude about it, whether it's going to be John Obika and he's not going to kind of really progress through into the first team. So, but yeah, I've really enjoyed speaking to lots and lots of players. We've seen some great characters over the years. I mean, kind of Lewis Holtby and people like that, who I'm sure the fans would love to have the chance to chat to after games as well.
Yeah. You both, speaking of more up-to-date events, you both did a virtual tour of the new Spurs stadium this week, didn't you?
We did.
You sent me a picture of you in a, what's it called, a VR?
A VR headset.
And
we got like a Xbox controller. So you're in the stadium and you're walking around with the joypad, whatever it is, so you kind of you're pushing the left hand one to move and the right hand one to look around.
Okay,
and it's 360.
That's really cool.
It was amazing.
What did you see? Is it what they consider a finished version, or are you just sort of looking around?
I think to be fair, it was really impressive and brilliant, but it was more or less a pitch to sell executive boxes to clients, to customers. So it was not like you could walk into the dressing room and look around and then walk through the tunnel. You were literally walking around the different executive boxes. The most, the one that's got the most publicity is called the Tunnel Club, that people have probably seen and read about, which is a bar and kind of restaurants next to the tunnel. And there's a two-way mirror, so you can see, you can see into it. And the seats for the Tunnel Club are right behind the dugout, so you'll be kind of feet from the players and feet
where
from
you
Pochettino,
used to be.
which is more or less where the press box or what
they've,
I mean,
they've,
now.
They've very much moved us now, because it used to be. I mean, I remember that game a few years ago, and I think David, during the time when David Bentley was always on the bench, and he was about two rows in front. I think he was like kind of knocked someone's hat off in front of him or something, and then he was whispering to someone's ear, and then he kind of did this half kind of turn around where he just suddenly realised, like, remembered who was behind him. He's like, okay, right, focusing on the game now, and that was it. You know, you could, if a player said something loudly enough to each other, you could hear it, and you know, there's no way any club these days, the way they were going, they don't want that. they don't want, you know, the kind of little private conversations to be heard by the journalists. So we're not far away, but I think we're going to be certainly a little bit further away in the new stadium. But it all looks great.
So what I found out on Saturday is that the reason City have got a temporary tunnel at the moment is because they're building a tunnel club at the Etihad. So I don't know if Spurs copied them or they've copied Spurs, but Spurs are pitching it as the first purpose-built tunnel club, but it's not actually going to be the first tunnel club. City are going to have it before,
right?
But the new stadium is obviously going to have that, and it's very cool. So we could wander around there in VR and wander around the upstairs executive boxes, whatever they were, and kind of open the doors. And there was kind of some lovely virtual women hanging around at the bars, and some weird blokes in suits and ties and stuff. And it was all very bizarre. But
anything to do with the actual ball? Like, did you? Is there a walk round of the pitch or the stands or anything like that that gives you an idea of just how close? Because the idea they keep peddling that's a quite negative way of putting it, but the wording that they keep putting out is just how the atmosphere is the main focus of everything that they're doing in terms of the build. Like, everything else is going to be great, but very much secondary to creating a good atmosphere or keeping a good atmosphere. So is there any idea of how close those stands are actually going to be to the
They did say that in the press release, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. I mean, it's close, but I think something like 8 metres. I've got the number 8 in my head.
I think it was there's no front row seat that's going to be further than 8 metres.
Yeah,
and the front of the single tier stand, the 17,000 seater single tier stand, is going to be 5 or 6 metres away.
So yeah, probably just over what it is now. Or maybe very, very...
I think they want to keep that claustrophobic feel that White Hart Lane has in the new stadium. They want people to be close to the pitch. And the problem with that event, because it preceded a press conference, was that it was slightly difficult to write about because it was just a pitch for corporate customers. But I think the one thing I took from it was the focus on atmosphere. Mm. Even to the extent that they talked a lot about how much booze was going to be sold in the new stadium, and said there's going to be a microbrewery and it's going to be producing 10,000 pints a minute on match days with a new beer delivery system.
Craft beer specifically. So they
which
said.
Which I think, I don't know this, but I'm imagining, I saw this thing online a while ago about this kind of system that fills up pint glasses from the bottom that they have in the NFL. Mm,
yeah.
Have you seen that? You kind of put a pint on and it just kind of fills up.
I mean, I'm just trying to work out. Here,
yeah, I know what
which
you
isn't
mean.
Good for the
pod. It goes through the bottom of the glass.
Through the bottom of the glass
seals
and seals itself.
Because at the moment you're just doing basically kind of this is how a pint fills, and I've seen it happen many times where the liquid goes up towards the top of the glass. Right, okay, I'm with you. Yeah, okay.
I think they have that in the NFL, and I just imagine, given the NFL deal and given they've pitched it as a new beer delivery system, that that's what they're going to have.
I think what I took from it, I mean, that single tier stand looks absolutely fantastic. It looks really good, and you imagine when that's full of people, if they can get, you know, they've talked about the acoustics as well. I think the people who've kind of worked with U2 are involved with this, and if they can get that right, that single tier stand, that will be, you know, especially evening games, especially European games, I think that will be the place to be. That will be really, really good.
It is going to be exciting. Was it exciting to see?
It made me think that, right, I'm looking forward to this new stadium now, more so than before, because there was some kind of VR video footage of, you know, panoramics of the new stadium, what it's going to look like when it's full, and it's good to see. It did make me think they're doing this properly, and that there's a lot of thought that's gone into it, and a lot of money that's gone into it. And
were the players going to be?
The players weren't there when we were there, but there was some footage of the players doing it.
Yeah, I saw that.
Apparently, Sissoko, 1 in 100 people get really sick from doing the VR thing.
Oh, right.
So it is quite bizarre. Yeah. You feel like you're walking around, and I can understand why you could get queasy, and apparently Sissoko couldn't do it.
Explains a bit, but I'm joking. Before we move on, we'll talk about City in a bit, but we should send our best wishes to Ryan Mason, who's currently he's in hospital still, as far as we know. The latest is that he's been speaking about the incident, which is apparently very important for anything like that. So he's conscious and he's doing okay, and I think that's the latest statement from Hull was that he was stable, which is great, obviously. But
absolutely,
extend best wishes to him.
We spoke to him a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? Last month, when Hull visited again, just kind of stopped and chatted and was talking about how quickly the new stadium had gone up, and saying, you know, couldn't believe it because it'd been a few months since last time I was here it wasn't that big, and now look at it. So yeah, really nice guy, and
strikes me as just a really normal guy who's living the dream. Okay, yeah, we'll move on. So you both went to Man City, is that correct?
Yes.
So I'm going to start with a question then. Dan, you've said quite a few times on this pod that you consider us title challengers. That was the beginning of the season and probably over Christmas when it really started to kick into gear.
Yeah.
What does a performance and a result, and you can take them exclusively or together, what does a performance or a result like that do to your mindset about us winning the title? Because I think we can all say quite honestly it wasn't a good performance, mainly because Man City were so good, I thought. but it doesn't change the fact that we probably could have lost that by the old scores of when we used to go to Man City and ship six.
Yeah.
But at the same time, with half an hour to go, we looked completely out of it. The two goals were, they were well worth those two goals. And we came back into it and we've come away with a point that we just didn't deserve at all. What does it do to your mindset regarding the title? Which way are you looking at it?
I think it, this isn't really an answer to your question, but I think it showed why Spurs could win the title, but why they probably won't win the title this year.
I think that makes a question. Sense. Yeah,
I think if, obviously, to come back from 2-0 down at Manchester City when they're playing that well says a lot about the Spurs team. They're really hard to beat and they don't lie down, they don't give up. And I think we, Ben, you probably covered some of those horrific Man City games in the past. But yeah. as Hugo Lloris said afterwards, and Kane said afterwards, in the past Spurs would have lost that game 4 or 5-0 after those two mistakes. So the fact that they came back into it says a lot about the team, and Pochettino's team's been doing that for 18 months to 2 years now, just making themselves really hard to beat and coming back in games. But at the same time, I think the game highlighted some of Spurs' frailties. I think City got it, pressed them really high, and there were two occasions in the first half. I think first Wimmer, then Dier, lost the ball in really dangerous positions, and it looked like Spurs didn't really know what to do. The fullbacks were pinned back a bit, and Pochettino had to change it midway through the first half. So there was definitely causes for concern, but the fact that Spurs got a point shows why I think they'll probably finish in the top four at the very least.
Ben, how do you
think? I think I'd be more positive about it. I think a draw would have been a decent result before the game. I think probably everyone hoped for more, and understandably so. And and Spurs have earned the right to hope for more. But already beaten City at home, if you get a point away against a top four or title rival, that's usually a good result. And if you look back at the teams that have won the leagues, I think, you know, beat your rival at home, get a point away, 4 points from six, great, you know. Beating Chelsea at home, you know, they're Spurs very, very good at home. And if they can go away and get a point against a team that's playing that well, then great. I think it was a good result at the start of the weekend. It was a good result before kickoff, given that Liverpool had already dropped points. It kind of gave Spurs a bit of a shot to nothing. I think they could afford to get a point rather than win after that result. And after 60 minutes, you're thinking a point would have been a fantastic result. And so I think any way you look at it, I think that's a positive result. And it says more about City, I think, than it does about Spurs. I think it just shows that everyone's, you know, if not written them off, at least being very down on them. And I think it's shown just what they can do. And it's shown that they should be taken still very seriously. If they produce that kind of performance every week, they'll still have something to say about what's going to happen from now on.
Do you think Guardiola's maybe set a blueprint of how to stop Spurs?
I was thinking that. I was trying to look at it during the game and say, you know, is this how everyone's going to stop Spurs? I don't think everyone's going to be able to do that. I think very, very few teams are going to have the players to play with that. And interestingly, I think City did to Spurs what Spurs did to City at the start of the season, which is to attack is the best form of defence, and you press them. And rather than the possible wisdom that you sit in your own half against a very good team who are in form and have great attacking players, rather than sit there and try and frustrate them and hit them on the break, you actually stop them playing out from the back at source. You press the goalkeeper, press the defenders. You know, City had that great run at the start of the season. Spurs actually, you know, went after them, left spaces in the middle, left spaces in behind, but they really got up and pressed them. City did exactly the same, and they, you know, we saw that lineup and thought, wow, I mean, either City are going to do well here and they're going to scare Spurs with their attacking players, and they're going to get on the front foot and they're going to make those attacking players a problem, or they're going to get whacked, because if they end up on the back foot with that system, they're going to get absolutely killed. And it was ambitious, just like Pochettino was ambitious against City and pressed them. City were ambitious and said, well, okay, we're going to stop you playing out from the back, we're going to stop you playing your game, and they made their attacking players the most important players. They got on the front foot, and that was the most important thing. I don't think Wycombe Wanderers are going to do that against Spurs, you know, on Saturday. Or most of the
look like he can press.
That's it. I think most of the Premier League teams are not going to be able to do that. And if they try to, they'll get picked off and they'll get beaten very badly.
Yeah,
so
that's fair enough.
I think full credit to Guardiola. I think he showed, and his players showed. I think they very much proved a point. I don't see that blueprint. I mean, the blueprint might work in Spurs, but I don't think many teams are going to have the players to execute it so effectively.
Weirdly enough as well, I say we could have lost 11-0 we came away drawing 2-2. But really, the only reason we conceded two goals is because Lloris were two real ricks, like bad mistakes. I think the first goal, he's trying to head that wide when it should just go out anywhere. I think if you see it a replay from behind the goal, he's trying to pass that with his head to Walker, 100%. Like 100%.
Playing out from the back.
I don't blame, yeah, I don't, I know. We've had this argument, me and Dan have had this argument on this pod before. I actually don't blame him for that. I do feel like that would have been the thing that, I think there was less risk doing that than trying to head it out and just getting it to Aguero 40 yards with no goalkeeper. But the second one's a big mistake, isn't it?
He does tend to make his errors in pairs, doesn't he? Wasn't there a North London derby where he made two mistakes? Was it for Gibbs's winner before that?
We haven't lost against them for a little while, so I don't think he's played in...
Maybe I'm getting confused. I mean, it was kind of classic because the whole pre-match narrative was about how Bravo was so awful, and I heard people around me in the press box, the Man City regulars, saying, if City had Lloris, they'd have 12 more points this season, and it's kind of semi-ridiculous stuff like that. And then he went and did that. It happens, I think. When you make a mistake as a goalkeeper, it normally leads to a goal. And when you make a mistake as a striker, it normally leads to nothing.
If he's going to make those two mistakes, I'd rather it came against City and for us to battle back to a point than for it to happen at home to West Brom and lose 1-0. Do you know what I mean? I think we were due to concede those two goals anyway, almost.
I'd probably say the opposite and say it was almost one of the worst possible times to do it, in the sense that you've got much less of a chance of fighting back away against City as you do at home against West Brom, but maybe, yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely...
Glorious hindsight.
Yeah, I am, I suppose. Yeah, that doesn't matter. We've got to get two chances and score both of them. You mentioned the shape change as well. Actually, it kind of had to change about two or three times throughout the game. We definitely... moved Dier into midfield with Wanyama about halfway through the first half when we were just getting overrun.
Well, the pair that finished the first half in centre midfield finished the second half in central defence.
They both deserve a lot of credit.
And there was quite a lot... I feel like there was quite a lot you could read into how Pochettino views the squad just from that game. Like, I thought he was going to start with Ben Davis instead of Wimmer. Just a hunch. I think we were saying that, maybe.
I always thought of him, to be honest. I know it's easy to say now, but no, I did.
I had a feeling he might go with Davis, even though he's never played there before. Just, I felt like he might do it. And the fact that he didn't start Davis and then didn't bring him on at any point as well probably suggests that he doesn't really view him as a centre-back after all.
Mm.
The fact that Wimmer, we all thought that Wimmer for Vertonghen was probably the one change you could make to that team that beat Chelsea that wouldn't make that much difference. Or would, if you had to pick one change, that might be the one you'd make. But actually, I think rather than kind of seamlessly slotting in, it almost had a domino effect on a few other parts of the team. I think Rose was... It's partly because of the way City played, but I think maybe Rose was reluctant to get too far away from Wimmer. The back three didn't look very settled. And it was a big part of how City played, but I think Spurs missed Vertonghen. And Pochettino made the right call to change it because Spurs got a foothold after he went to a back four in the first half.
I think in second half as well, I think although we conceded two goals, I think going to a back four made us look a lot more settled, and bringing Sun on as well gave us a little bit more of a... It just made something different because we didn't land a punch in the first half at all, I don't think. Going forward, obviously Vertonghen's going to be out for 7 weeks, 8 weeks. Is that been concerned?
Six as of last Friday or
six,
whatever.
With Pochettino. Pochettino six.
A Baker's dozen. Pochettino 6 weeks could be 7 or 8.
Yeah.
So we seem to have stumbled on this, or we seem to have worked ourselves into this 3-4-3 formation that has been really successful for us in the admittedly short time that we've used it. Is it about us sort of accommodating just anyone to make sure that back three stays together? Because Wimmer did have a bad game, I thought, but would you stick with that if you were Pochettino, Ben, just to make sure that Walker and Rose could be used in the same way as they've been used in the last couple of weeks? Or do you look at it and think, Spurs just haven't got the players to do it. Go back to 4-2-3-1, bring Sun in, Sissoko, whoever. And just change it up until Vertonghen's back. What do you think will happen? And what
I think he'll keep it the same. I think he'll play the same team in the next league game, and I think probably that'll be the right way to go. I think Vim has played He played well there against Watford. I think he won the ball just before Spurs scored the opening goal. He gave it away and then won it back in Watford's half. That led to the opening goal. I think he's fine. It's just if it's not the game. It wasn't the game to come back in, and that wasn't his fault. Very difficult game, and also, you know, how many players looked brilliant against Man City. I think, you know, Dyer picked up an early booking as well. Dyer also gave the ball away on the edge of his own box, and he won't be getting. I mean, to be fair, he then I think really did brilliantly from then on, particularly seeing as he was on a booking. But I don't think he had a great first half either. Alderweireld really, I think, and Lloris between them kind of. You know, bailed the other two out probably a couple of times. I think it's fine, and then you've got Ben Davies as well, who plays on the left side of a back three for Wales. So really, actually, in that position, there's almost more cover than there is in other areas. You've got two players there who can always battle it out as the reserve two. I think it'll be Vimmer, partly because you would have thought Davies will start the cup games. Instead of Rose, allowing some rotation there.
Yeah,
Vimmer will probably play, I would have thought, all the way through, and then it'll be, you know, largely kind of Davies and Rose alternating as they did this time last year in the Cups in Europe and in the Premier League.
Fair enough. Dan, would you agree?
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that.
Cool. I want to talk about Wanyama, because you did put it on the provisional running order, but I think you can't not mention he was incredible in that second half, considering it was we did have two central defensive midfielders in defence or at centre-back after Toby went off. And I think that's not been mentioned much, really. For us to go to City and, however you want to look at it, to come back from two goals down and to have both of your best defenders out, or two out of the three, let's say, we've got away with it, really, haven't we? But it's just ridiculous to consider that we could go to City and for a third of the game be without Alderweireld and Vertonghen and come away with anything other than a 4-0.
Well, it's worth mentioning Winks before coming on to Wanyama, because I read in Michael Cox's piece in The Guardian today that apparently he didn't misplace a pass after he came on.
So he was brilliant.
So actually, Alderweireld going off at the time, that looked like curtains for Spurs. It didn't look good at all. But actually, Wanyama did a job at centre-back with Dyer, and Winks then came on and gave Spurs a bit of composure and a foothold in midfield, and actually that change worked in Spurs' favour, surprisingly. But yeah, Wanyama, I think Pochettino, I don't actually think he's as good as Dyer in that position. I've said it before, and it's not a popular view. I think if you want to win the league title, and you need that extra 1 or 2% sometimes, I just think Dyer's better on the ball and he's a bit more mobile. But I think Pochettino just trusts Wanyama, and he knows he's not going to let him down. He knows that even if he gets booked in the second minute, he's not going to do anything stupid. He's going to stay on, screen the back four, and just do a job in there. So I almost feel like he's just become his kind of general on the pitch, which is quite surprising given that he was a new signing up in the summer after last season.
He started every league game as well.
I think he's missed every league game.
It was Vertonghen, and I think he's, until his injury.
Yeah, he was great. And the fact that he went to centre-half and Pochettino didn't bring on Davies or Carter Vickers again shows that he just trusts him.
Mm.
He just knows that he's not going to let him down and do anything stupid.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely crazy. But Toby, he said that he felt his hamstring was about to snap, didn't he? But he travelled with the squad to... They're in Barcelona at the moment, aren't
he
they?
He did, yeah. Like, I think the plan was to assess him and Rose. Rose had a knee brace on.
Right, didn't know that. Okay.
When he left. I didn't actually see that, but another journalist said so. I think neither of them trained today, judging from the pictures from Barcelona, but I think they weren't going to play against Wickham anyway.
So. No, and it's Sunderland's Tuesday, isn't it?
So, tomorrow week, yeah.
Yeah, so we've got, you know, there is time to sort them out. Nathan at TT Tactics, or I think it's Talking Tottenham Tactics, isn't it, Nathan? He can correct me later on. Should Sterling have gone down? Walker's push on Sterling, which I find really funny. I'm finding it really, really funny, and I get why there's a bit of outrage. But what I quite like is there doesn't seem to be that much outrage at Walker. because it wasn't. I don't think it was.
It's poor old Sterling's being criticised for it.
And Sterling and the ref, quite rightly, it's a poor. It's a terrible decision. Yeah. And I think if you can see it from watching on TV, any referee should see it. And if he does go down, I do think he's going to get that penalty. I think it's that blatant. But what do you think of something like that?
I think that's the problem. Is that the referees put Sterling in a horrible position, which is that he's getting criticised. I don't know, criticism might be a bit harsh for Yaya Toure. I think it said after the game that if you're an experienced player like me or words to that effect, then you go down. And it's terrible when, you know, we're always moaning about diving and we don't want to see it. We can't have a situation where we're questioning whether a player should have gone down. You know, we have to say Sterling acted admirably, and Walker. You know, that's what you do. You know, if you're a defender in that position, you take a calculated gamble and you go, if this gets spotted or if it's too obvious, then it's a penalty. I'm probably getting sent off and I'm going to get hammered for a week, and everyone's going to be saying I've thrown away my team's title chances. But you do it because otherwise, you know, he's probably going to score. So Walker got away with it completely because the referee let him. But I would just hate to see really any criticism of Sterling whatsoever, and you know, anything suggesting that he's kind of not canny enough or streetwise, because this is, you know, you've probably been reading X number of comment pieces from everybody saying that we want to stamp diving out of the game and that and why can't everyone be, you know, be better about this. So
was it 2-1 or 2-0?
2-1, I think.
2-1. Spurs went straight up the other end and scored.
Of course.
It's an absolutely crucial moment and great sportsmanship from someone, and he should be. He should be lauded for that, but then you've got the referee's got to give it, and if he doesn't, then unfortunately you go back into the dressing room afterwards, and all your teammates are probably going to tell you that you've done the wrong thing, even though everybody outside probably is good for the game.
Exactly, like you've tried to shoot, you've tried to stay on your feet.
Yeah,
it was a 1-on-1 at the end of the day, and all that stopped him scoring is somebody just shoving him in the back.
I wonder how much of it is the fact that they're England teammates, and if that's a foreign player who doesn't know Kyle Walker, who hasn't been in a dressing room with him at the Euros, does he go down, or is there something just in his head going, actually, this is a mate of mine? Maybe doesn't. Mm. But I just wonder whether any part of him kind of thought, you know,
I think you'd know. I think if you're Sterling, you'd know the only person that it's going to be is Walker. If you're thinking what's behind me and you're not checking, if you're through on goal and you're on that side of the pitch, you know that the only player that's getting near you is Walker. I think even Walker said it himself, like, I wasn't going to catch him. Yeah. So
the only way I'm going to stop him.
Yeah.
I couldn't help but imagine Pochettino, this is just based on nothing
loving
apart
it.
From what I imagine, but Pochettino just absolutely loving it. Like a kind of classic.
Well, he said
kind of calculated risk, you know, within the rules of the game that Spurs absolutely got away with.
He said it cancelled out the what he called a handball for the first goal, which again is
in front of the cameras and the media.
Yeah, comparing apples and oranges as well. You said that we went straight up the other end and scored with Son. I think we had that was our second shot on target, I think.
Poor Claudio Bravo.
hasn't saved a shot since the 2nd of January, so the BBC Sports says. But Son is turning into a bit of a contributor, isn't he? I think he was out of the team for a little while, and I think it was the City game, the home game, where he kind of announced himself and he looked brilliant up front on his own. Then I think he went to Cesca and scored the winner, or it was the other way around. I can't remember exactly which way around it was.
Yeah, a spell where people kept saying he was on fire.
Yeah.
Because he scored two at Middlesbrough, two somewhere else.
Sunderland.
Stoke?
Yeah.
One at Cesca. Well,
he was player of the month, wasn't he? Premier League player of the month. So, I mean, he deserved all the accolades he got.
I think it went unreported and a bit unnoticed, but he said he got an injury in international duty, and I don't think he missed any games, but I think he was maybe carrying a knock, and he struggled a little bit, and he went off the boil. But he's sort of fashioning himself into a really effective impact sub, isn't he? Against Southampton, did he start or did he come off the bench to score?
He came off the bench. He won the penalty against West Ham as
Yeah, he also came off the bench.
Mm. You know, just a quick stat, that of his last 7 league goals, 6 have come away from home.
Really?
So he's, you know, that's. I think that does actually say something. I think that's there is something in that. Don't know what it is, but there is something in that.
I think the only thing I'd add is I still find him a very frustrating player, and that he played in the game at Watford. I think he started. He started kind of almost up front with Kane, and I'm sure he had more chances than anyone else in that game, and everyone else stuck them away. And he missed quite a few, and you just kind of think, if you could just be a bit more clinical in games like that. I mean, it didn't matter. I mean, Spurs completely destroyed Watford and they didn't need it. But you just kind of feel like, you know, are you a clinical player? Are you the guy who comes on and scores the equaliser against Man City, or are you the guy who misses a hatful against Watford? You're never quite kind of really sure what you're going to get with him. I still kind of put him very much in the kind of inconsistent bracket. But sometimes that's not the worst thing. I mean, it you know, you're just not quite sure what to expect from these people, and those kind of players can just, you know, come on and keep
against Sunderland
up with
on Tuesday, next Tuesday, I'd absolutely, like, I wouldn't have any problem with him in starting lineup.
Yeah.
I wouldn't really have a problem with anyone in starting lineup against Sunderland, to be fair. But someone like Sun, you look and you think, yeah, you probably could come away with this with a hat trick quite easily.
Yeah, I think it's important to have guys like him in the squad. I remember the season before last when Kane, Chadli and Eriksen all scored more than 10 league goals, and everyone made it out to be quite a big deal. It was like, Spurs have got these three guys, they've all got into double figures, but Kane's already on 13, Ali's already on 11, and Son's already on 7. So you imagine that's going to happen fairly quickly. If Son can get a couple more, then that's going to happen again, and that they might all get to, you know, some might get to 11 or 12, and you'd think Kane and Ali will both get more than 15 now. So it's a good thing that it's not just all on Kane, which it felt like at times it was last season. I mean, I know Ali got a good total in the end and he got 10.
Yeah, he's now outscored his total from last season. He was on 10 last season, he's got 11 now.
It did feel like it was much more on Kane.
I still don't think Song gets into that starting lineup. I wouldn't say he's necessarily that close either, really. I mean, unless it's squad rotation and things get a bit busy, I don't think you pick him over. There's now two spots behind the striker, Ali and Eriksen, and I just don't see him getting in front of either of those.
I think he's not just a personnel change when he comes on. He can change a shape as well. So I think there is an there's virtue in having a sub like that isn't going to be a like for like. You know, it's not really anyone like Ali or Eriksen in the squad, which might actually work in our favour this time with someone. Bring someone like Son or Sissoko on. If you've been playing up against the movement of Eriksen and Ali and Kane as well as a defender for the last 70 minutes, and then you see one of those two coming on, it's going to be kind of your worst nightmare, really. You've got a totally different thing, like, you know, something completely different to contend with that's in front of you.
I think that's very much what Spurs lacked at times last season, and what the fans picked up from, you know, the whole plan B things we mentioned for a long time. I think in the summer Spurs were keen to get in game changers. I think that's what Sissoko was meant to be, you know, if either for rotation or an impact sub. And exactly like you say, bringing on Son, bring on Sissoko, players that can come off the bench and make an impact. I think for most of last season that wasn't really the case, and you felt like the status at 70 minutes was probably going to be how it ended, unless one of the people in the starting lineup came up with something else. It probably wasn't going to be one of the guys coming off the bench. Now I think that's probably different, and the subs that the people that come on, you think, actually, you know, there's every chance one of these guys is going to do something.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Let's move on to Kane. You're saying that the onus isn't entirely on Kane anymore, Dan. There was something on Football 365 today, and they were talking about, well, they were doing winners and losers from the weekend, and they listed Kane amongst the losers. And I think the narrative was that it was another big game that Kane's failed to turn up in, which I think it's a bit harsh considering he's been injured for 8 weeks of the season. And I can only really think of Old Trafford as being a game where he was really under par. I thought he was okay against City. And I don't think it certainly didn't warrant a point of an article to be made out specifically about him. But he's heavily marked now, isn't he, Kane? Do you think he's doing anything wrong in these games? Or is it just a case of, you know, everyone's got to pull their weight in this and you're not going to score a hat-trick every single week? Not everyone's West Brom.
Yeah, I don't think it's fair, really. He, as you said, he's heavily marked. And these games, as we saw on Saturday, are tend to be decided on really fine margins, and actually big players make a difference at crucial moments, and that was a great assist from Kane to Son, and that made all the difference for Spurs. So that was probably the best move Spurs put together all game, the kind of intricate couple of passes, and then Kane played it sort of the outside of his boot to Son, and it was a good finish, and so he was decisive and he made the difference. And I think if Kane's proved anything in the last few years, it's that he is a big game player. He tends to step it up against Chelsea and Arsenal in particular, in the London derbies, in the biggest games. And scored the penalty against Arsenal again. It's a penalty, but it's a high pressure moment.
His first game back as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's not the kind of player that is gonna beat a few men and you know smash it into the top corner every match. He's that's not really his game. But the fact that he is occupying those defenders, I think it's no coincidence that since he's come back into the team, Ali and Son and Eriksen have started scoring more goals. Mm. When he was out the team from October to late November, that was when Spurs pretty much only scored penalties.
Yeah.
And it was really bleak. And there was an argument that those guys needed to step up when Kane wasn't playing. But actually, I think when he's playing, it's much easier for them to step up, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't think Ali, for example, I don't think Ali scores his header if Kane's not on the pitch against City. Do you know what I mean?
I'm just struggling to remember where was Kane.
He was in the box. Yeah. Like, you know, he's there occupying two pretty village defenders, to use a term that you've brought into my vernacular. I just think that he's someone like Ali can thrive with someone like Kane. I don't think someone like Ali can thrive with a Janssen. I think Janssen's doing the right things, if you like, but
I still have this vision of West Brom away early this season when Janssen kind of got the ball, held it up, and then played a kind of reverse ball, and Ali was running through onto it and went into the box and it got saved. I mean, it's one vision. I have one memory of a moment when Janssen and Ali teamed up and it worked quite well. So
he set up Son at the Riverside as well, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I'm just kind of wary of doing the whole Janssen's never going to make it kind of thing. I think it's a bit more nuanced than that, but yeah.
No.
Sorry, we were talking about Kane anyway.
Yeah.
he's a failure.
Yeah. We'll see this weekend.
But I think we've got some stats that Football 365 put out there. In 515 minutes across the six games against Chelsea, City, United, Liverpool and Arsenal this season, he's only managed 17 touches of the ball inside the box. Is it worth reading into anything like that? Again, if you're coming away from those games with points because he's occupying defenders, because he's, you know, if one of those touches is the penalty that he scores from, who cares? Like,
yeah, and one of those touches was the pass to Son.
To Son, exactly, yeah. So there's not... Stats can...
I think you'd need to see what stats other strikers are getting in the box against those same teams to really compare it, but... The one that we can all look at and draw firm conclusions from is the goal scoring chart, and he's right up there, like you said, despite missing all those games. So there's no doubt he is a big game
and
player.
And Spurs are right up there as well. It's not even as if you can say Kane's only scoring against certain teams.
No,
because if that was the case, you know, like Charlie Austin at QPR, for instance, you know, scored 18 goals in the season, they got relegated.
Mm.
But it's all relative, and he's doing so much more than what his goals suggest. So I don't think it's really necessarily up for discussion. But what is more pressing matters of Wickham Wanderers. I know.
Big one.
It's 3 p.m. kickoff. Is it White Hart Lane? This is terrible.
I don't
actually know. I'll give you some stats on Wickham Wanderers. They're on a 15-game unbeaten run, which I know I pulled the same face, Dan, to be fair to them. Last loss they had was against Coventry in early November. They're fifth in League One.
They're in League Two.
League Two. Yes, they are, correct.
You're about to say you don't know much about them.
Yeah, yeah. So
this is a Ben Pearce derby, so we should probably hand over.
Yeah, it is. So Ben, explain why this is. Did you grew up in Wickham?
Yeah, I went to school in High Wickham.
Okay.
I know the area quite well.
So the next 5-10 minutes is all on you, I'm afraid.
Well, I did about 10 minutes. I can probably give you about 90 seconds. But no, I mean, I went to been to a few Wickham games. I went with my dad to a League Cup tie against Aston Villa. I think 2005. Martin O'Neill was in charge of Villa, and they had Gareth Barry, James Milner, and Gale up front. And Wickham were 3-1 up at half time, and all the fans were chanting, "We want four," and it looked like they might get it. And then O'Neill brought a couple of players on, and Villa scored 7 times in the second half.
Right.
And it was 8-3. It was one of those games where my dad kind of, I mean, he was kind of into football, but mostly, you know, I was trying to get him into it a bit more. And it was one of the first games we'd been to, and that was a really good one. So we went to a couple of really bad Wickham games actually, but that was a really good one. And I was at Villa Park for the FA Cup semi-final against Liverpool, which was a great story for the local area, which ended 2-1 to Liverpool. But they were 2-1 up, and then a guy called Keith Ryan scored a kind of lob inside the box fairly late on, I think, kind of made it a little bit more nervy. And there's a town just down the road called Gerrard's Cross. And I think Gerrard actually set up both goals actually with crosses. And there was a kind of local campaign to rename Gerrard's Cross Ryan's Chip.
Did it work?
It didn't. No. Gerrard's Cross still exists to this day. It probably would have maybe meant a little bit more to if it had been away in Wickham. I suppose there still might be one.
And then I'll have to
go and visit my parents.
They've got a bit of a history might be a bit strong, but so not just that one, which was what that semi-final against Liverpool.
I think 2001.
Okay,
I think it was 2001.
But then they reached the semi-finals of the League Cup as well when they played Chelsea.
Yeah,
and I think they drew 3-3 at home. They used to have a really big striker called Tommy Mooney.
Yes, yeah.
Who was a
he scored in the game against Villa. Yeah,
and a bit crazy, like a bit loose, let's say. I seem to just have this idea of Wickham Wanderers as, you know, every so often they have these sort of cup runs. So, yeah. I mean, are we in any danger of falling victim to that? Or,
I mean, you'd have to say almost certainly not. Mm. But you know, obviously these things happen all the time, and you get these. I would probably say if there was one team that I'd want, you know, that I wouldn't mind beating Spurs in the fourth round of the FA Cup, it'd probably be my hometown club. But
you're not coming back
then. you'd have to say, I mean, on current form, I think Wickham probably in for quite a long afternoon. I mean, I think we probably all saw that video of Wickham, all the Wickham players cheering in the when they got the draw, and I was kind of thinking, I imagine the feeling's mutual, and if you could see a video of all the Spurs players watching the draw, then you might have seen a very similar video. So we'll see what happens. But I say, if it ends up as a draw and we have to do a midweek trip to Wickham, I think I'll probably I'll mind less than other people.
That would be gutting.
And I'll show everyone where the classic. Yeah, exactly. I'll show you the.
There's a TGI Fridays, isn't there?
There used to be a Weatherspoons, which did some cracking Polish beers. Yeah.
How do you know? I've been there. For some reason, my only Wickham story. My parents live in Oxford. For some reason, I went to the cinema in High Wickham. Like, we drove up the M40, went to TGI Fridays, as if Oxford doesn't have about 5 cinemas.
Yeah.
So there we go.
All right, there you go.
But I can't offer much on the team.
Obviously
the Yak and Ven were banter.
Second top scorer. I'm not even top scorer. I can't remember who is top scorer, but
they've got another striker who's
banging his name. He's got like 12. Yak and Ven was got about 9, I think. I think they're, let's call them, traditional centre forwards. Yak and Ven has got the most red cards out of the Wickham team, though. I did pillage the BBC
here,
Sport.
Mate.
Oh, I did, mate. Yeah. Except I don't know what league they're in.
Yeah.
I don't think Wanyama's going to play, but I would kind of. I think it would almost be worth the price of admission for a kind of 50-50 between Wanyama and Akinfenway, kind of shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah,
I think that would be worth one of those kind of top trumps. You know, who comes out on top kind
I'm
of things.
At Winks.
Twitter poll, I think. That's
Winks
what's
versus
weird.
Akinfenway could actually put him out of the stadium into the new one.
Winks is stronger than he looks.
He's quite stocky.
He is.
Winks is stronger than he looks.
He's still Winks versus Akinfenway.
Or maybe Tommy Carroll isn't Bender, still.
Tommy C. Who had an absolute blinder of a debut.
Oh yeah, thanks.
And fair play. Yeah,
we've mugged him off in this podcast
and Sigurdsson as well. So nice.
Thank you, Tom. That was a great debut.
Yeah, absolutely. It just feels like a big opportunity for someone like Janssen. Do you agree, Dan, to come in? Would you expect the same sort of team as what played against Villa?
Yeah, definitely.
And therefore, it was
Tuesday night in Sunderland, which really is just Spurs have to win that, don't they?
Yeah.
You can't be dropping any points against Sunderland at the moment. So I would expect him to maybe make as near enough to 11 changes as possible. In normal circumstances, you might expect Alderweireld to be the one player to... Maybe last season, he'd have been the one player to stay in that 11, but since he had a tight hamstring, I make him probably a doubt for Sunderland, actually.
Yeah.
I don't think hamstrings... It tends to be a kind of 10-day thing, doesn't it? So I think...
In that case, then, would you see Dyer or flat back four, Vimmer and Carter Vickers? Do we risk Vimmer?
I think
Vimmer,
he'll go Vimmer, you know? And Carter Vickers.
Yeah.
And rightly so. I mean, you've got to feel if they're on the bench in Premier League games, you've got to and pushing for a start in Premier League games, you've got to feel like they can play against Wycombe Wanderers.
Mm.
Yeah, and I agree on Janssen. I think he's really got to score. He'll start, I'm sure, and he's really got to score from open play, because he didn't look anywhere near. Well, he didn't look like scoring against Villa, and Pochettino even said afterwards, you know, he was disappointed. His confidence took another hit, and you feel like if he has another one of those performances against a team two divisions below Villa, and Pochettino has to haul him off on 60 minutes again, what's his head going to be like, and when's he going to get back on the bench, let alone in the team?
Yeah, he's been left out the last couple of
leagues. He's not been in the squad for the last three league games, so I really feel like he's just got to get, you know, the old cliche, one's just got to go in off his quite
considerable
big
backside. yeah.
And I really hope it does, because apparently he's like the nicest guy at Tottenham.
Yeah.
And I think he's working hard, and he's been trying, but just hasn't been very good so far.
Ben, would you sort of, what I'm trying to say, like build the team against Wickham around trying to create as many chances as possible for Janssen, or is it just about getting through that time?
I don't think you can do that. I think the moment you're doing that, then you're already saying something about that player. You're already saying that he's not good enough, and you know, absolutely not. I mean, maybe you do if you're 3-0 up in the 70th minute, you maybe, you know, you don't take him off. And maybe you look at doing whatever you can to get him on the score sheet, but no, I think it'll be three at the back again, and it'll be the same system. I always quite enjoy these games. I think the FA Cup is less important, or at least I think clubs are treating it differently these days. But there's plenty of interest, and it does give you a chance to see different players. I mean, Nkudu looked really good when he came on in the last FA Cup tie. So, you know, are we going to see? Is he going to pick up where he left off there? Is Josh Onuma going to get more of a run out? You worry, you know, kind of if he's still on the bench in the 80th minute again, and he's coming on for the last few minutes, then you just kind of think, well, what's he learning at Tottenham?
Yeah.
You know, maybe training very well, but you know, is he better off on loan? I mean, we know Pochettino doesn't think so, but you have to kind of just question how much he's getting out of this season at the moment, and whether he's really progressing to the extent that someone like Winks would. Carter Vickers, I mean, it'd be interesting to see. I think we've seen Carter Vickers playing some pretty easy games, and then away at Anfield against Daniel Sturridge, which is two extremes, really. So, I think Wickham's probably going to be. I don't think they're going to pose too much of a threat. I mean, might be wrong, but you don't feel like he's going to get a really serious test at Whitehall Lane. I'd like to see a game in the middle, you know, kind of average kind of game, maybe against a kind of mid to lower Premier League club, where we can really kind of see a bit more of him. See what he's like, but yeah, I think there's going to be kind of lots to look at, and Janssen will probably be the one that everyone's talking about after the game, one way or the other.
Just quickly, Edwards, is he, because he had an ankle injury, didn't he?
I don't know if he's fit.
No idea.
We'll probably find out later on in the week.
Mm. Okay, fair enough. It would be nice to see him. I'll do a couple of list of questions to finish up with. Ben Bowman at Benosaurus. Sorry, I didn't actually read that before, and it's made me laugh. This is quite a nice hypothetical question. Would players like Tom Huddleston have thrived like Kane, Winks, Ali, etc. have under Poch? I mean, you would have seen kind of the progression of Huddleston, I guess, wouldn't you?
Because
he was still quite a raw player under Ramos, I guess, when you first came in, and then Redknapp seemed to trust him, and he was captain against Inter, wasn't he? I always forget that he was captain for the home game against Inter. He was quite heavily trusted with him and Modric in the middle.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there was a time when, I mean, I remember a quote from Redknapp, and it was kind of when Palacios was fading, and Redknapp said something like, he just basically almost dropped Palacios, I think, or was about to, and he said something like, you know, the thing is, if you've got the ball, then you don't need to be chasing it. And it was almost like kind of saying that he'd kind of changed his mind a little bit about central midfield, and he reckoned if he played Huddleston and Modric together, he didn't have an enforcer necessarily, but Spurs would stop giving the ball away so much. They'd have more of the possession, and they'd be spending less time defending, and therefore less need a Palacios. And I mean, Huddleston had some really big moments. I mean, it was his winner at Bolton, sorry, at home against Bolton, wasn't it? Just before the Man City game.
Yeah, it was.
Which was a game which looked like Spurs, that was going to be, everyone was talking about Man City already, but they had to beat Bolton to set that game up. And it was Huddleston came up with a cracking goal.
Great goal.
Really
wasn't
great
it?
Goal.
Like postage stamps.
And then I think I'm right in saying, if I remember correctly, that when Spurs were behind in that playoff against Young Boys away, he came on. And Huddleston came on and changed the game on that on that plastic pitch.
Yeah.
So at that time, he was actually a really, really important player. Mm. You know, it didn't necessarily work out for him from kind of long term. I think again, the team evolved. And that's kind of what I was talking at the beginning about, the kind of the fascinating thing about the way this team has evolved over the last kind of 8 years or so, is that they're having players who have kind of been better than they have before. Huddleston is an upgrade on Palacios, and then there's someone who's an upgrade on Huddleston, and then there's an upgrade on that player as well. And then the way it's all kind of moved on, there've been backward steps along the way as well. And you'd probably look at it and go, well, actually, he's definitely a step down. But eventually, they've ended up with, you know, this great manager and this great set of players. I think it would have been really interesting to see what Pochettino would have done with someone like that. And we were talking just before we came on air about Lennon in particular. If Pochettino had been able to improve Lennon's end product to the extent that he has with Rose and Walker, and possibly Eriksen as well, with the consistency of that end product, then you could have been talking about, you know, a very different player for a few years there. So I mean, it's a hypothetical; we'll never know. But I think you can't argue with the improvement that a lot of Tottenham's players have made under Pochettino.
Would have needed to shed a bit of weight, definitely. Mm. But as a technician, I've never seen anyone at White Hart Lane hit a ball harder and cleaner than Huddleston ever did. It used to frighten me because he did nothing to. I remember a goal against Sunderland. Bent missed a penalty. Gomez brought him down and saved it, as was his wont. And it was 1-0 at the time, and we went up the other end, and Huddleston scored an absolute screamer off the bar. And I watched it back again, like later on. And he barely moves his foot. Mm. It's almost like a glitch in a computer game. He could just sort of tap the ball and it would just go arrow. It would just arrow.
Well, another thing Redknapp said was he coined the term quarterback for him, didn't he?
Mm.
I think he more or less envisaged him just kind of standing in front of the back four, not really doing much running, getting the ball to feet and just pinging a 30-yard pass into Bale or Lennon and kind of setting Spurs. Thanks, Spurs.
Like what Dawson used to try and do.
Yeah, exactly. I think Ben summed it up well. But another one, Lennon would have been fascinating if Poch had got hold of him as a 20-year-old, 21-year-old. Genus would have been fascinating if Poch had got hold.
Really done well.
Genus would have been, you know, might have been a bit more like Ali than he was if Poch had got hold of him.
Or Dembele, I think, in a way. He had a lot of skill sets. There were a lot of these guys
who didn't. Who had good Spurs careers, really. It's hard to knock them, but
cup winners.
It still feels like with a lot of them, there's a sense of unfulfilled potential, and Pochettino seems to have a knack of getting people to fulfil it.
And as you say, with cup winners, they've done something which this current squad haven't done yet.
Quite right.
Leads us nicely
on
to
penalty
Saturday
as well, didn't they?
Exactly.
So, yeah. Yes, it does lead us nicely on to Saturday. We're going to be back next week to do a Sunderland preview, do you think? But it's going to be more of a weekend.
Are we going to bother doing that? Because
don't know. We'll talk about it off air. But just trying to let you guys know what we're going to be doing next. But in the meantime, Ben, thank you so much for coming down.
My pleasure
to meet you, and very nice to have you on. Dan, nice to have you back, mate.
Thanks, mate.
We'll see you again next week. Thank you very much for downloading. Oh, before we go, can you give us some iTunes ratings and some comment and some what's the word? Comments?
Reviews.
Reviews, that's the one. We never asked for those, and I think it's about bloody time that we did. Dan.
Yeah, please do.
Thanks very much for joining us. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.